Welcome to RBC's Markets in Motion podcast, recorded April 22nd, 2024. I'm Lori Calvasina, Head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Please listen to the end of this podcast for important disclaimers. Four big things you need to know. First, investor sentiment has taken a bit of a hit, but it's too early to say the pullback is over. Second, while we continue to expect the pullback to bottom out in the 5 to 10% range versus recent highs, we have taken a look at S&P performance around recent wars to gauge potential downside risks if we're wrong in that assumption. Third, it's been a rough start to 1Q reporting season as companies beating consensus earnings forecasts have been underperforming in terms of immediate price performance. Fourth, we've been surprised to see large cap growth underperforming given the recent move up in 10-year yields, and run through the reasons, besides crowding and overvaluation, that we think this is happening. If you'd like to hear more, here's another 7 minutes. Now let's jump into the details. We'll start with takeaway number one. Sentiment takes a hit, but not quite enough. With the S&P closing on Friday more than 5% below its recent peak, it's reasonable to ask whether the pullback is done. Our answer is possibly, but we're not convinced. The key thing we're watching are net bulls in the AAII survey, which have for the past few months kept us on guard for some disruption in equity markets. In December, net bulls returned to levels roughly one standard deviation above their long-term average, similar to last August when another pullback sparked by hot inflation prints, Fed fears, and rising 10-year yields took the S&P down 10%. In last week's update, net bullishness fell to 4.3%, taking the four-week average down to 19.1%. That's a better range for stocks, to be sure, on a go-forward basis than where we were a few weeks ago, but it's still well above the level seen last year in late October when this indicator fell to one standard deviation below the long-term average. U.S. equity futures position on the buy side, per the latest data from CFTC, also suggests that the frothy sentiment that's been in place for the broader market and mega-cap growth stocks in particular is a problem that's far from fixed. Positioning on the buy side for the broader U.S. equity market, S&P futures, and NASDAQ futures simply hasn't fallen much, and it's all still sitting at extreme highs. Meanwhile, widely watched indicators of stress in financial markets, such as the VIX, equity put call, and the TDEX, a gauge of tail risk, have all moved up, providing some additional tangible evidence that market stress has picked up. These are close to levels seen last fall, but still remain quite low when looking back over longer periods of history. And while it's not exactly a sentiment gauge, it's also worth noting that the period of outflows from U.S. equity funds that's been seen on the EPFR data recently has been relatively short in terms of its duration. Global equity funds have also started to see outflows in EPFR's recent updates. Both of these point to de-risking. Our approach is fundamental, but when sentiment-driven moves in the equity market take hold, we think it's important to consult technicians. Our technical strategist believes an important threshold was broken last week and that the next major level to watch on the S&P is 49.31, then 48.45. That's interesting to us because our valuation model has pointed to 4,900 as fair value for the S&P 500 if the Fed doesn't cut again this year. Inflation is stickier than anticipated with PCE around 2.8 at year end, and 10-year yields end the year at 4.75, far more elevated than most market forecasters anticipated to start the year, but still below last year's 5% peak. Moving on to takeaway number two. S&P declines around recent wars have been similar to recessionary drops. We noted last week that our base case is that the current pullback will bottom out in the 5 to 10% range versus recent highs, ending up no worse than the pullback that the S&P experienced last fall. Pullbacks more than 10% usually occur when a growth scare happens as investors start to bake in a recession that doesn't end up happening. The improvement we've been seeing in U.S. GDP forecasts makes us doubt we'll see a pullback beyond 10%. But if we're wrong, we'll think it will be because the economic narrative will shift or because current geopolitical conflicts take a much bigger turn for the worse. In this context, we've updated some work we first put together back in 2022. It looks at the depth and duration of S&P 500 declines around the Gulf War that began in 1990, the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan after 9/11, the Iraq War of 2003, and the Russia-Ukraine War. Though none of these is a perfect point of comparison to the current situation in the Middle East, we think it's telling that these market declines range from 20 to 34%, in line with the kind of drops that the S&P 500 experiences during a recession. Next up, takeaway number three. It's been a rough start to 1Q reporting season. Earnings beats have been plentiful for both large cap and small cap, but revenue beats have been lacking. Interestingly, the companies in the Russell 1000 that have beaten consensus earnings forecasts have actually been underperforming in terms of their immediate stock price reaction post-results. That's also happened within the Russell 2000. As our regular readers are well aware, our team reads through as many earnings call transcripts as we can to get a feel for key themes. Core themes are still emerging. Some of the things that are jumping out at us so far: for the most part, descriptions of the U.S. economy and consumer continue to be favorable and emphasize strength and resiliency. Some companies are planning for a wide range of economic interest rate scenarios or highlighting the uncertainty of the interest rate path, while others are still baking in a general easing scenario, which will be a stimulus for better trends going forward. Some companies are still talking about back-end loaded forecasts, making some investors we've spoken with recently nervous. Several companies emphasized how they or their customers are managing through challenges and headwinds. The big banks mostly emphasized the restarting of the IPO and M&A markets, as well as full pipelines, alongside healthy corporate confidence levels. We can't help but wonder if those confidence levels will stay high if the geopolitical situation continues to deteriorate. Companies continued to highlight elevated geopolitical risks, though few specific thoughts were shared about the current situation in the Middle East. The uncertainty associated with the current heightened level of geopolitical risk was in focus. Color on geography was light, not surprising given the heavy presence of financials and results so far. Commentary was mixed and company-specific. And AI was in focus, with several companies highlighting their view that AI is still in its early days and will take some time to mature and evolve. One company pointedly said this is a 2026 and beyond story. Companies, particularly financials, also highlighted their efforts to build out these capabilities and their use as a productivity or cost savings tool. Wrapping up with takeaway number 4, the growth trade is under pressure. We confess we've been surprised to see large cap growth underperform so badly last week, given the recent move up in 10-year yields. For most of the past year, leadership in the top 10 names in the S&P versus the rest of the index, as well as the large cap growth trade generally versus large cap, has been moving pretty closely with trends in 10-year yields. We've been vocal about the overvaluation and crowding that we see in the mega-cap growth trade for quite some time. Beyond those issues, which have been in place for a while, there are a few other recent developments we think are encouraging the leadership and rotation in the market. For one thing, earnings sentiment no longer looks better in growth than value. Within the Russell 1000, the rate of upward earnings revisions on the sell side is a little bit stronger for value than growth right now. This reverses the trend seen throughout 2023, when the rate of upward revisions was far stronger in growth than value. GDP forecasts have also moved up another notch recently. As of Friday, the consensus 2024 projection for real U.S. GDP moved up again to 2.4%, taking it close to this stat's long-term average. An economy that's running above trend has tended to be a better environment for value than growth in recent years. The deterioration in funds flow that's been underway recently has also been sharper in growth funds than value funds. We are continuing to see as well negative or deteriorating flows from growth-oriented sectors like consumer discretionary and tech, alongside improving flows to cyclical and commodity sectors like energy, financials, industrials, and materials. We see this as further evidence that the U.S. equity market is really taking its cues from the rapidly improving perceptions of the U.S. economy. That's all for now. Thanks for listening, and be sure to reach out to your RBC representative with any questions.
This content is based on information available at the time it was recorded and is for informational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell or a solicitation, and no recommendations are implied. It is outside the scope of this communication to consider whether it is suitable for you and your financial objectives.